Well, hello, superstars, and welcome back to another episode of Word Up with Danny Katz. Today I am joined by whistleblower multiple times over, Justin Leslie. Justin Leslie, her first hit the public consciousness as the Pfizer whistleblower when he was doing undercover journalism work for Project Veritas. He then came back around whistleblowing again on Project Veritas and James O'Keefe. And he recently put out his own documentary, Project Whistleblower, wherein he walks us through all these levels and layers of whistleblowing and dishonesty and manipulation and collusion and all the rest of it. Justin is such a sweetheart, such a light. I met him for the first time at Confluence in Texas, then got to hang out with him again at Music in Sky, and it was just such a pleasure and an honor to have him on the show today. Before we dive in, I'm reminding you to click that subscribe button, to like, to share, to comment. And now it is time to buckle up and prepare to enjoy my conversation with Justin Leslie. Love it. I spent
As
the whole
soon,
morning with you.
what's that?
I spent the whole morning with you.
Oh, you did? Did
You came
you?
to the gym with me. We got
Oh,
in a
God.
good leg workout.
Did you like listen to interviews and podcasts that I was
Yeah,
on?
well, no, I finally did the Project Whistleblower.
Oh, you watched the whole thing.
What happened on the walk afterwards?
Oh, I have all this unreleased footage.
I was so curious because it was like such a juicy, and you did it so well. I was really impressed with
We
your
can get
journalist
into
skills.
that for sure. Oh, say that again. You're impressed with my
I
what?
was really impressed with your journalist skills and just the build to that final phone call. Like you timed it, paced it so well.
Yeah. Well, do you know Marty Leitz? He's the
No.
co-producer of all this. Without Marty, there's no Project Whistleblower. I was not capable of like putting all of this together like that, at least. I mean, he You should look into Marty Leitz. He's a pastor, and he's done eight documentaries before. And I met him actually at Music in Sky 2 years ago, not the recent one we were both at, the one
Okay.
before that. Marty Leitz was a speaker, and he's the pastor of Gnostic Academy.
Okay.
So
Ooh,
he's
nice.
like, he's a Gnostic, super Christian dude, really, into flat Earth and everything else. Big into saying that the Masons aren't like involved in everything, which I don't know. Like, I think the Masons are somewhat involved, but I let Marty toot his own horn too, So
The Masons are massively involved. There's no getting around it. The symbolism is everywhere.
I know, but he goes into the Masonic text and brings it in like a Gnostic perspective, and then he's very big on like the Jews and everything, and I kind of overlooked that part of him because I think he's kind of tunneled visioned on it, but.
Like the Jews are the problem?
In a way, yeah.
Okay.
I think it's way deeper than it's just the Jews. I think it's like they want us saying it's the Jews, it's not the Jews, or like a love hate type thing with that. And I kind of see through it now. I kind of got sucked into the whole Zionist, like, oh, it's Israel, all that for like a month or so. I'm young, I'm 26, so I'm like really new to all this shit still. I was like, oh, is it the Jews? I don't know. It feels like everyone, the Jewish population is 98% overrepresented in the government or something like that, like whatever the percentage is. And, but like, they want us to see that shit. That's kind of how I've gotten to it. And so I look at the Zionist regime or whatever you want to call it. It's more of like a foot soldier type thing. And they're answering more or less to higher powers that were, like you say,
Ooh,
so
I love it when people use my phrases.
well, I've learned a lot. I mean, I kind of just recently discovered who you are, just from Confluence and Music in Sky recently, so I really didn't know you were involved with Plandemic too. So I mean, this is a whole full circle thing for me, because I don't say it in the documentary, but Plandemic 2 was really with Project Whistleblower, the article that I did for Rutgers, like I did that 10-page paper, whatever, called COVID-19 Uncovered. So I went through all the patents on that and I went bing, bang, boom, did all the internet research and was like, holy smokes, this is crazy. And I was still a virus believer at that point. I was more like, oh, this is the flu rebranded type thing, you know? But yeah, it was a huge push in the right direction, that's for sure. You know,
Awesome.
so go work on that. And I know Mickey still dances on whether viruses exist or not, I guess, but I don't know. We could
No
touch on that
comment.
if you want. I mean,
We
yeah, no comment. You know
can
comment.
touch on all of it. I've been recording this whole time. I'm sneaky
I
like
saw. I
that.
love it. You could probably f put some reels and stuff into that. I don't know. However you want, but I'm
I like.
excited for this.
Oh, cool. I'm excited too. Yeah, I remember when your first interview came out. Like when you hit the streets as the Pfizer whistleblower, and my podcast partner Emily and I were like, he's too good looking. He's too well spoken. Like, come on, who organically just drops in like that?
I know, honestly, no, seriously. I appreciate the fact that people are questioning me incredibly. Like I deserve it in the sense of my story is honestly like ludicrous to even like imagine constructing this thing, but it's all played out like this, you know? And I'm not perfect either. Like do I, you know, it did I do it perfectly? No, I was like doing recording in a two-party consent state, and I had no idea what the heck that even meant when at the age of 23, you know? So I don't know, but it's not like no one was telling me it, like, oh yeah, by the way, Justin, this is you're not doing this legally. And we could also totally dive into I wanted to actually add that to our text message where like legalese versus, you know, natural law and dealing with that system, the system as a whole. It was so against me, you know, like recording consent, everything else, like the state line stuff, everything was just built to stop me from, you know, just being a whistleblower, which is all it's not like I like wanted to sign up to be a whistleblower. I just felt like God was calling on me to do this, you know? So it's a lot. I think I'm really gonna enjoy this talk with you. I have my handful of like favorites and I already feel like I felt this morning like Danny and I are gonna kill it today. You know, so but I appreciate all the skepticism, honestly, and it's fun seeing how people react to it. So, you know, some people are like, this doesn't feel real. I'm like, well, you wanna have me on your podcast, ask me questions, vet me for what it is, you know? I mean, I say I'm just a dude that was trying to do the right thing the entire time, you know.
Totally. And just so you're clear, like my suspicions are those went away a long time ago, especially when I actually met you. But it was, you know, the past few years have been so weird because so many of us were on the front lines, like doing the right thing, and we had our batch of like friends and colleagues and family who ditched us, and like we kind of thought that was it. And then 22, 2023, we're like, wait a minute, you were on the front lines with me, but now you're lying and shilling, you know? So it's just created this kind of like heightened paranoia and suspicion of like, is anyone real? Does anyone have integrity at all?
I hear you. And I think everyone's on their own journey too, you know, and we can't, like, just because we're willing to talk about no virus and someone else isn't, doesn't necessarily mean that they're shilling or they're not a good person. But they're also, it doesn't mean that they're not in that sense of they have some waking up to do still. And I don't know if you like to use the term waking up. I don't necessarily like to use it because of, you know, the word, you know, where do you go to awake? Like, or what happens with awake, right? The way the English language is built and constructed, it's just so crazy. And I've woken up to all of that. So, you know, I know you're tapped into all that too, and openly talk about it. So, but to use the term waking up in a sense, It's just a stepping stone, you know. And I was listening to some of your conversation with Dr. Bear and Mike, and how really discovering the nature of this realm and like what reality is really what these powers that were are preventing us from doing. And that all ties into the flat Earth. Virology ties into all of it. And I'm not even saying, oh, I know it's flat. I feel like I'm pretty 100% certain that it's not a spinning ball hurtling through a vacuum, you know, and that we're chasing the sun or whatever, you know, like it just sounds ridiculous.
It sounds ridiculous that all the stars come with us. Like, if that story's true, then why aren't we seeing new stars, new constellations? I always come back to, I have no idea because I haven't left the planet. And even if I left the planet to have the perspective to see, I would still be blinded by my five senses because we see very little. You know, we don't have that many capacities here in third dimensional reality. I find it amusing how people get their panties in such a bunch about it, and how, like, whenever they say we're not allowed to question something, I'm like, why? You know, like, as a Jew, you know, on all these free speech platforms, you're allowed to say anything, but you can't question the Holocaust. And I'm like, well, why? If I can't question the Holocaust, what are you hiding? You know? So that's my thing with Flat Earth is like, why aren't we allowed to talk about it?
Yeah, I hear you. I think it should be an open, free-flowing conversation, you know. That's
Totally.
how I feel about all this. I mean, I'm no expert in really anything. I've gone down a lot of rabbit holes and my life became a rabbit hole. So
Yeah. It's yeah, I'm excited to dive in. I'm gonna hold that thought.
hold the thought and then you what, do a intro or something with me, or are you
Oh,
just
no, there's no intro. I do
you
those
want to do it?
separately. Yeah.
Okay, cool.
We just kind
Okay.
of dive in. You know why it
Awesome. We will dive in.
is? Because I don't feel confident doing the intros, so it's easier for me to just like, let's have a conversation. Then when we're done recording, then I'll do the intro based on what we talked about. Kind of ease into it. What I am fascinated by is I've seen so many friends of mine. And I agree with you. There's no such thing as waking up. Like, I'm still figuring a bunch of stuff out. I'm still deprogramming myself. It's ongoing. But I've watched people who, as of say 2019, believed in government, believed in viruses, believed in those things, go through a really accelerated awakening process, for which I have a ton of compassion, because that's a lot of worldviews. You know, a lot of rug pulls. It seems like what you've gone through seems to be particularly extreme. You know, starting with your livelihood and all this schooling, and like, this is what I'm going to devote my career to. So I'm curious to know, like, how this has been for you in terms of like how many worldviews have been shattered in such a short period of time, on top of you putting yourself in the line of fire the way you have.
Yeah, my whole worldview, honestly, Danny's flipped entirely upside down. It's starting in 2020 with, you know, the scamdemic that we'll both call it. But I mean, the reason I got into pharmaceuticals and all this is for good reasons. I wanted to get in. It wasn't even for money. I wanted to get into pharmaceuticals to be that one guy who was actually going to cure rare diseases, because I was diagnosed with a dis-ease at the age of 10, called tuberous sclerosis complex. I'm not sure if you've heard of it, but creates benign tumors apparently in all organs of the body. And, you know, it's just a disease with a really long name. And, you know, that was what really traumatized me at a young age. And so throughout middle school, throughout high school, even I was kind of depressed and really didn't know what was wrong with me. Like I'm athletic. I can do other things other kids can do. I'm not autistic, which is a huge proponent to this disorder. And I didn't have epilepsy. And so I was like, okay, God gave me a reason to have this mild version of this disease to cure people. And, you know, so that's why I ended up applying for pharmaceutical science school and was either going to do sales rep or become a scientist. And then a lot of my undergrad education was in bench science. And so, you know, I remember I go through the motions still in my head, and I didn't really enjoy it, you know, calling myself a lab rat or whatever. But that's just what I had to do, I guess, to wind up into getting inside Pfizer eventually during this, when crimes against humanity were essentially playing out. But my whole worldview completely changed before even getting inside Pfizer as a scientist. And I mean, we were talking, Plandemic 2 was a huge reason for that. I was in the middle of a master's program of biomedical sciences at Rutgers, and I couldn't fathom like doing anything other than putting, I went through Plandemic 2 and put all these patents together and said, okay, this does not add up, not add up, not add up. Took the Rockefeller Foundation aspect of it and researched more into it and Project Lockstep and just really saw through it all. And I was one of maybe two students at in my master's program that was willing to push the envelope with our professors. And not that I was like calling them out during lectures and everything, but I used this drug discovery class as or drug development class as a means to purge and go through my awakening at, I mean, I was 23, I think, at the time in my master's program, so, or 22 even. So I was young, and I something clicked in me that forced me to go down this, and I think it was the fact that I was essentially setting myself up in a career in big pharma, essentially. And I didn't align with it and needed to find a way out. And so, but I didn't really have a way out, so I kind of went into the belly of the beast.
It's badass. I mean, is that how you generally roll? Are you, I mean, are you, 'cause even just listening to your conversation with James O'Keefe, and like you wouldn't back down. Like you were, I mean, I could just feel like that would be so uncomfortable, but you were, you know, like you were in those conversations. Is that, was that challenging for you?
Definitely. Absolutely. I mean, it's not easy to finally, I mean, this would fast forward all the way to the end of my journey of working for James and dealing with James. So for the audience who doesn't know, I mean, I was a Pfizer scientist who reached out to Project Veritas, James O'Keefe, to be a whistleblower, was offered a job, then worked there for a year and a half, got the biggest story in company history and realized the whole thing's a sham, with the alternative media. But with my resignation call and opportunity that was presented to me, this was right after Music and Sky. James called me, and he was already pressed about this whole Bohemian Grove thing that was playing out. And we could talk about that probably in itself for hours, but it was just the precipice for me of, okay, like I could essentially go undercover still and figure out more about this Bohemian Grove trip and all of that, or it's finally time to reveal yourself that you're not this guy who agrees with James O'Keefe anymore, and you're not this guy who is gonna take no for an answer anymore when crimes against humanity played out. And I mean, I felt so manipulated and almost, I don't want to use the word raped, but like just mentally raped in a way, like where I was forced to just stomach so much weight, and it was really all resting on my shoulders. I didn't even stomach it. It was just dealing with all of that knowing of, okay, this vaccine that I worked directly on and wanted to help people stop taking is absolutely harming people. So, and killing people, and like I'm open about that and how it's really impacted me. It's a wound that I don't know if I'll ever fully recover from, but I had to make that next step. And I mean, I could have made it simple and said, yeah, James, I don't agree with you going to Bohemian Grove. I'll resign. And then that would have been that. Like, I love you, buddy. But no, I had to bring all of this Pfizer dirt back up, because I never really had that conversation with him. And I knew for a fact if I didn't, No matter how hard it was, I mean, Danny, I was shaking during this call for the most part, but it was also, it was a way to release for
Yeah.
me. And I knew that if I didn't do this, it would have been one of the biggest regrets in my life based off of just the timing of everything. I mean, one of the biggest regrets I have is, oh, I wish I had created my own backups for this entire situation that played out.
Yeah.
Because if I had my own terabyte drive versus being self-reliant on Project Veritas, on James O'Keefe, on the colleague, my future colleagues to have done the right thing, this Project Whistleblower wouldn't have even have been necessary. But, I had to learn those lessons, and I'm not by no means perfect, but I am also here to tell the truth. And so, yeah, I mean, going through that conversation was not easy by any means. But I had to do what was right too.
Yeah. I mean, Phil, like my background is as a journalist as well. I got my master's degree in journalism. So, in listening to it, it was one of those like, this is so uncomfortable. And this is also journalistic gold that you were getting it and had the wherewithal to do it. But there are just so many elements to this. Like, you're presented with virology is a scam, viruses are a scam, vaccines are a scam. But you're like, I can still do good work. So you're going in to whistleblow on the pharma company, and then you pair up with this alt media company and you end up whistleblowing on them too. Like, it's crazy. What are the freaking odds?
I don't know. That's where oh, Danny, I mean, the whole thing became so not, I don't know if misconstrued is the right word, but so complex because I'm able to see all of the narratives, right? Like,
Right.
obviously, those that are awake are like, oh yeah, the COVID vaccine's it's harming people, it's killing people. Well, that's important. And to hear that testimony coming from someone directly, it was working on it. I was one of how many at Pfizer were not taking the vaccine. It was about 5% on my campus. I know that it's not an exact percentage, but around 5% of the
Was it tough for
total.
you to not get it? Like A at Rutgers, B at Pfizer?
So Rutgers wanted to vaccinate me through the screen. I was doing Zoom University with them where I was doing my master's program full time on Zoom University, essentially, just listening to Zoom calls through professors teaching in their classrooms at Rutgers. So I was doing it at home in Connecticut, and I was pulling my hair out, basically. I was like, this is insane. Like, I'm not learning anything new. It's just a little bit harder than my undergrad work.
Right.
Move over. I took the job at Pfizer, so I was only doing one class. A pharmacotherapeutics class. And after that semester, boom, mandates come down for Rutgers. And I said, oh, by the way, Dr. So and so, I won't say the names, I'm not taking this. I'm going the route of medical exemption. I didn't file religious exemption with Rutgers, which was probably a mistake. I should have just doubled down on both. And they didn't respond to it. And then they locked me out of my Scarlet Knight account. So I pretty much was just blacklisted from the university, and I had a conversation with the director. I was like, I'm not doing this. He knew I worked at Pfizer on the COVID shot, which was really interesting. And he also, I mean, I pray for this guy. He was in the ambulance on the phone with me, and he had recently just taken shots, the COVID shots, and he said he like had a heart attack or something like on the phone, which was just pretty ridiculous, how that all played out. So Rutgers blacklisted me. I couldn't even access my curriculum or whatever else. And so I said, okay, this is like God telling me just don't even entertain Rutgers anymore. It was essentially a stepping stone to just get to Pfizer, I guess. And then dealing with the Pfizer COVID vaccine mandate, it wasn't hard for them to get that 90%. 90% of the math of the people at Pfizer were just signing up, lining up to get the shot because they were working on it or they're just involved with the company. And the colleagues, I was technically not a Pfizer colleague. I was just a contractor, so I was technically a Mindlance employee, which is the consulting agency that recruited me to just work at Pfizer. They dealt with my vaccine status. So all of the people that I was working with that were technically colleagues, their vaccine status, which is all HIPAA violations anyways, was known directly by your manager. So your manager knew. My manager, Conwall, who I talk about in my documentary, she had no idea. She had just assumed that I was vaxxed, probably, and I danced around the subject my entire over a year time that I spent working there, where the first couple months I pretty much avoided the topic whenever it came up. Like, oh, someone new got hired and wasn't vaxxed. So it's like, oh, like so and so is getting their vaccines now. And it was like June or whatever. And I just pretty much kept my mouth shut. And we all had to wear masks in these labs. And so, it was also a good way to essentially stay undercover so that people couldn't like read my facial expressions. But yeah, I just was stern with my contracting agency, and November 12th was the day of the deadline where if you're on campus, you need to take this vaccine and or you're gonna get fired. November 12th rolled around at 9 o'clock that morning. Pfizer sent a company-wide email, and I called their bluff. They sent an email saying, oh yeah, by the way, you can just continue to take the PCR test if you're not vaccinated and you work on site. And so that's how that all played out. And the PCR test thing, I stopped taking that as well. I mean, I in total probably tw I think twice in my life actually stuck a swab up my nose, which I'm not proud of. One was to go to a Yankee game, and I got to do it myself, so I like hardly stuck it up. But there was one time in my life where it basically tickled my brain. But the PCR tests at Pfizer were different. They were like these spit ones. So I did that about three times. I didn't really follow the orders, but I was also scared to lose access, like get fired because I wasn't complying at least with this whole PCR thing, because I was doing this undercover stuff on the inside with this journalism organization. And I didn't want to lose access because I knew I was sitting on something that was golden, So it was a sacrifice that I was willing to make, essentially. So.
And do you think that like Project Veritas from the get-go was stringing you along and never had any intention? Do you think something happened along the way?
Great question. And I mean, I'm still not fully sure of this answer, to tell you the truth. I think that there were good people working at Project Veritas that wanted this story to be released, but they didn't truly understand that, like, if they released it, everything would have been okay. They're really sucked into like the legalese and the legal paradigm of what is legal versus lawful. They're listening to their lawyers and their advice of all of that. And so I think that a lot of the people at Project Veritas were there for good intentions, and the people that I worked with, for the most part, had good intentions and intended on the story being released versus just stringing me along. But I also believe that there is no way that Project Veritas and James got as big as they were without some strings, essentially, the invisible enemy allowing it to occur, to essentially have a situation play out like mine, where, like, I don't know, Danny, like, why did they give me cameras in the first place if it was a two-party recording consent state? I have no idea. Why didn't they tell me about that? I have no idea. Why didn't they tell me about that until all of this played out? Like they didn't bring it up. They didn't like shake me awake. Like, Justin, by the way, this is what's playing. Like they strung me along in a way. Correct?
And
I mean,
they
that's the
invested
way I
in
looked
you.
at it.
Like that was time and money
Oh,
on
they
their
spent
part.
$1 million on that investigation. A million. of donor funds and threw it out the window. And I know that because
doesn't make sense.
I know, Danny, that I know that because of the release of this documentary. I didn't know that prior. Callan Erickson is a senior producer that I used to work with at PV. He was doing all my cutdowns and everything, you know, as well as all of the production team. He was one of the leaders of the production team. He took screenshots from one of the microscope chats that was ascent, you know, my code name was Microscope,
Yep.
right? So there's a bunch of leadership people during my time as a whistleblower. I think it was November 28th of 2021, where James O'Keefe sends this big message. Is like, yep, we shouldn't give sources that are in two-party consent states cameras because of these reasons. We shouldn't do this, shouldn't do that, and you know, I'm willing to take the blame on all this, essentially, and you know, kick $1 million out the window, essentially, is what he said. And the whole journalism team that I worked with was pretty destroyed by it, I think mentally. But there's also, you know, the aspect of there are the excuses. Like there's be brave, do something is your motto.
Right.
And I was being brave and absolutely doing something to help save lives and bring attention and informed consent really to the masses. And they're not willing to, you know, maybe second guess or overlook these laws, you know, which are really state statutes. Like it's not constitutional law that the constitutional laws that they were looking at. They were looking at state statutes in Massachusetts with recording consent, where, I mean, if you go into case law, even you can find potential arguments to release this footage that I was obtaining.
Right.
So I don't know. There's the FBI raid that occurred during this entire time as well, which I also found extremely interesting in regards to the timing of everything. Like
Right.
you know, to answer your question, I was a really risky whistleblower. Because I knew that this was harming people, and you know, I took the vials and I gave them to the team, and we put them under a microscope. No one in there's sane mind, I suppose, would have done that, but I was sane in an insane world. I was willing to do that and really do dangerous things in order to bring the truth to people. And you know what I saw under the microscope with Dr. Carrie Madej that night and the rest of the Veritas team that I was working with was actually insane. Like what? And I don't know, I mean, people have said, you know, I certainly don't trust everybody, but Dr. Carey and I were both mind blown that evening, and so was the Veritas team. I mean, there were these black and purple looking spider web like shards that is linked to Teslaphoresis technology and carbon nanotubes. Like, I think that's entirely possible as to what's happening, but I could be wrong. You know, I could be wrong. Don't get me wrong, I'm not claiming I know everything in regards to the vaccine and you know, these white clots are that are coming out of people, but it's a hypothesis, and it's just really heavy that
So
all of
heavy.
that played out. Yeah, absolutely. So, but the whole thing with like the FBI raid occurring was one of the biggest red flags for me as to taking a 40,000 foot step back and understanding Operation Mockingbird as a whole and what it is today, and how the FBI raids that have occurred on O'Keefe, have occurred on Trump, they all have some potential hidden meaning in the sense of like, oh, look, James O'Keefe got raided and it has to do with Ashley Biden's diary. But little did the public know that James was also working, you know, his team was working with a Pfizer whistleblower who was doing some pretty dangerous stuff and willing to, you know, not, you know, I wasn't, I mean, I guess I was willing to die in a way, but, you know, we could talk about reincarnation and everything else, but I just was willing to do what not a lot of people were doing.
I get it. I feel like there's a way that some of us are wired where, like, it's the right thing. We just do it. Like I felt the same on Plandemic too, where it was like, those were like 19-hour days. Mickey would call me at like 2 in the morning. We need Fauci rewritten. I'd be like, of course, because we thought we were going to shut it down. Like we thought everything was going to work. And in those, in those instances, it's like easy to put ourselves aside because the greater good is so clear. And then when we're thwarted, it's like, are you kidding? And
Insane.
you risked so much. Did you have any, like, aside from maybe Dr. Carey or I don't know, Project Veritas, but did you have support while you were going through this? People who were on your wavelength?
I have one friend who, and it didn't really start with having a friend or, not a colleague, but I have a friend who I'll leave nameless that he was awake to no virus. By the time I was at PV, and he was awake to the alternative media, essentially, the gatekeepers in a way, and who those people are. And I told him my story after the fact. Told him like, oh, I did all this at Pfizer with PV, and he's like, dude, you got played. Is kind of how it all was in the beginning. This was probably in 2022. And, but no, the answer is no. I really did all this by myself. Didn't really have a mentor, didn't really have someone coaching me on any of this. This was all just from me. Like this was like Project Whistleblower. I mean, shout out to Marty Leeds for helping me co-produce it, but and without Marty, there's no Project Whistleblower documentary. But without everything playing out, I mean, there was no mentorship essentially on figuring out all of this about James and Project Veritas. And I kind of just had to go down the rabbit holes myself. Danny?
And while you were going down these rabbit holes and putting yourself on the line in these really extreme ways, were you going through what the rest of us were going through with like friends and family telling us we're crazy? And like, were you dealing or were you playing that more cool?
Great question. And it's kind of a happy medium for me, believe it or not. I have friends, like my high school of friends, I'm still all very close with them. And, I don't want to violate HIPAA, but they all pretty much got the thing, And I
Okay.
was the only, it's this weird contradictory situation. Like they knew I was working at Pfizer and that I was anti-vax. And then I'm like, guys, don't do this,
But
although,
you would think it would mean so much more coming from you. Like coming from
yes,
me, why would anyone listen to me?
it's also a huge reason as to even why I did the whole go work at Pfizer. I'm like, I'm gonna go look at this from a, I mean, non-conspiratorial perspective, but see how it is on the inside and really see what's playing out and still pay attention to my conspiracy rabbit holes essentially. But
Right.
like 6 months into the job, I was on the phone with my brother, on the phone with my dad, who both caved into this hokey pokey thing.
Yep.
Not getting boosters and all that other nonsense, but they complied with the fear. And, I told them on multiple phone calls, like, do not do this, do not do this. Like, listen, I am here, I am working on this thing. It doesn't look like something that you should be injecting yourself. I mean, Danny, the thing, I'd hold it up to a black light and it literally glows. And that's connected potentially to the luciferase enzyme or the lipid nanoparticle technology that is in it. I think it's both of them that really has to do with the fact that it's not a translucent vaccine. It's something that is, it's white, essentially. It's like grayish white matter. And so,
And is it a coincidence that it's called luciferase?
no, well, that there's so much esoteric need, there's so much esoteric meaning behind it. And I mean, I brought this up at Music and Skies, regardless, whether it's just an enzyme that glows up or not, why are they calling it luciferase? And it's crazy. I mean, it's an enzyme that comes from nature in jellyfish and fireflies. But
Okay.
why are you using an enzyme that you could call it lytase, right? Like that would probably take all of the Mark of the Beast conspiracy out of the whole thing if you
Right.
just called it lytase. But we're gonna call this luciferase, and just the fact that they were using luciferase as an enzyme to do research of these lipid nanoparticles and where they go in the body, that's what they used it for technically in just animals. But like during my time working there, I saw videos on BitChute specifically of people like taking black lights and putting them up and down their arms and glowing, which I've never seen that before, and I'm hearing this luciferase enzyme, literally seeing it in Pfizer documents that I had access to in research. I'm like, okay, is the luciferase like the trial vials? Are they just being used as well in people, because this just doesn't really make sense.
Right.
And there's the whole quantum dot thing and everything else that Karen Kingston and Dr. Anna Malhotra talk about, which I'm not fully on board with all that, but I need to dive more into what they talk about with that. But I mean, I'm not
And
gonna hold anything.
I'm sorry, she's the one who disappeared, but then was all of a sudden not missing anymore. Okay. Okay. I'm sure nothing fishy happened.
Yeah, me neither.
All right, do you mind if we move solely through this? Because I just have so many questions.
Yeah, let's go. You have me for as long as you want.
Oh, thank God.
I
Thank
don't have
God.
a schedule, Danny. Like we're good.
Awesome. Yay. Okay, so when you're at Rutgers and you're studying what's so topical, is there any conversation about ethics, about exemptions to getting these things? Like, is any of that being taught or discussed as all of this is happening in the world?
Great question. So, exemptions weren't discussed because the vaccines weren't out yet. So, I was at Rutgers from, I started there in September of, this was September of 2020, right? And then the second semester, or my semester ended in November, December, right? Like Christmas time is normally when semesters are over. The vaccines weren't out yet, right? From what I remember, they were approved, what, like right around January 6th or maybe a little before. So there was no talk about exemptions, but they did actually preface, like, oh, yeah, by the way, the COVID vaccines are going to be the savior thing, essentially, that get us back on campus. Once everyone's vaccinated, we're all going to be fine and dandy back on campus. So there was definitely predictive programming in that sense of, oh, we're all in this together. Everyone, go get your shot. This is our shot, right? But they weren't shoving it down our throats, but some professors definitely mentioned it. And I was definitely a black sheep in the sense of, I don't know. I mean, I didn't necessarily bring it up in class, but like when I would, maybe have an online study group to try and figure out like if my other students were not in that air, not in the vaccine, pro-vax crowd. It was only one other student that I'm friendly with still that, she and I are friends because we were like the black sheep of this group that we were in. And so, but I didn't really have this conversation with the professors other than back to the COVID-19 Uncovered that I wrote, this 10, 11 page article off of Plandemic 2, where I said, this is going to be my entire research on why this whole thing is either a plandemic or scandemic. And I presented it to my professor, Dr. Welsh, and he gave me 100 on it. So he said, great job, Justin, in the email. And he's like, they didn't really have a problem with it. So maybe he was actually based and was seeing through it too and just wasn't necessarily talking about it in class, but it wasn't fully shoved down our throats, I think, until they were approved. And at by that point, I was only in one class.
And what was your degree in?
Biomedical sciences, Masters of Science in Biomedical Sciences.
And there was no mandatory ethics class in this program.
Ooh. I'd have to go back over the curriculum. It might not have been mandatory, but I think that there was some sort of ethics offering.
Interesting.
So, like in drug discovery was my favorite class because my professor was super cool. He was, although he, I say super cool, and he was also involved in like the manufacturing of opioids, you know. So there you go. Like he was cool in the sense of he was just like well versed and you could talk to him and he was funny. But no, there was no real ethical conversation that was happening from these professors. They're like, oh yeah, by the way, like this is totally gonna be an optional thing for you to do. It ended up coming out, yeah, that following year later where they said, oh yeah, you're mandated to take this thing, even if you're doing it part-time online, which is what I was trying to do because I was working for the pharmaceutical giant Pfizer, right? They knew it too, like, or at least some people did. The director of the program knew it, and so he had actually assumed that I was vaxxed. And when I told him, like, oh, I'm going for this exemption, he was pretty shocked, you know. So, I don't know, it's definitely like this cult mindset of like, oh, like we were in this together type thing, I think was coming from Rutgers.
Yeah. I mean, I noticed it because Mickey and I, we worked together on a children's health defense advertising campaign in 2019 when they were trying to take medical exemptions away from the children's schedule, like just the standard schedule in California. And we were just like, how could this even be possible that like a state clerk with a high school diploma can override an actual doctor who's saying, no, this is not in this child's best interest. Like back then, we were like, this is insane. And that, I knew this was coming. We didn't know in what, form it would come. But I noticed in 2019, there was this show called Midnight. It's Duncan Trussell, Midnight something or other. It's like him talking and then these random animations. And he was interviewing Annie Lamott. And the animations just had so many hypodermic needles just appearing out of nowhere and being shoved into these beings. And I knew exactly what was going on. I'm like, they're programming us, they're
Yep.
prepping us to be okay. And I was so curious. Like, I was, stalking Duncan Trussell on Twitter. And I'm like, was that part of your contract at Netflix that you had to have hypodermic needles in? But, yeah, the whole thing's just so crazy. When you were at Pfizer, do these people, are they just totally ignorant and like kind of ignorance is bliss? Is there anyone there who had a conscience, who understood what was going on? Like, what do you make of the people who have contributed to this?
Oh, that's a long-winded answer, probably. I mean, there's many. The way that Pfizer was constructed is there are these like boxes of people. Like, I wasn't in large scale manufacturing. I was part of the analytical portion of a small scale manufacturing team that had two components to it, you know. So, like, I didn't really get to know that many people. You know, my team was relatively small. It got as big as 10, 11, 12, maybe. So, you know, and Danny, I was not really willing to have this conversation of, oh, I'm anti-vax with anybody because there were people on my team who were very pro-vax and like were talking shit essentially about anti-vaxxers or people that had vaccine injury. Like, I mean, during my time when I was obtaining all this information, there were some conversations that Project Veritas that were pretty bombshell in the sense of one of my colleagues was saying that, you know, if you had like an anaphylactic reaction from the shot, like that might be something that you can complain about, But like, oh, if your arm hurts and you feel like shit for 2 days, like you shouldn't be filing anything and with the system, and just really like talking down on the fact that like it was kind of getting out, that like I felt that it was maybe starting to get out that there was this huge anti-vaccine movement, you know, and we were supposed to be these pro-vaxxers. So there were definitely people that spoke out about it. And like I remember to this day having a conversation with the same person doing an analytical assay with them, and they were saying, you know, how do people not get vaccinated? I mean, you know, they had just gotten their booster, I think, for a free donut or something. And I was just rolling my eyes. I'm like, how do you not see it? Like, how are you just complicit with a donut to get something that is free from the government and Pfizer and not second guess anything? Like, at least question it. You know, I mean, you've already gotten two and you're gonna get the booster. I mean, I think it was the booster. It might have been the first two that they complied with, and you know, but they definitely did get boosted, and I don't know. But it's just the fact that, like, are you kidding me? Like, I look at the what is it, Governor Murphy from New Jersey video where he's like, oh, burgers and fries, like the I'm thinking of vaccines. I'm like, this is straight up like 3 years later. I am so glad that I obviously like stuck to my guns and didn't just fall in line, you know, because I look at it as it's the biggest joke. It's all propaganda, obviously, like the Stephen Colbert or whatever, like dancing around with the vaccines and singing the song on his show, like vaccine or whatever. And it's like we survived the biggest propaganda campaign that had billions of dollars thrown into it. But I mean, how did people not see it sooner? You know, I like, 'cause I saw it pretty much right away. You know, I was will like I saw through it before taking this role and was essentially just willing to go in to the belly of the beast and, you know, see it for what it is and be a whistleblower, you know.
Were you questioning your career path or your education path before you figured out what was going on?
I think so a little bit. Like when I was going through my undergrad, I was just struggling to like fall in love essentially with lab work, I think, you know, and you know, it was not that exciting, but I believed in it in the sense of like, oh, this is how I'm gonna make a living for the rest of my life. I'm gonna be a scientist for 20 years and then probably get into consulting or whatever.
That does it for the first half of my conversation with Justin Leslie. As you are inspired to pick up the second half of our super juicy conversation, you can find that on both my Locals and Patreon communities. Those addresses are dannycats.locals.com and patreon.com/dannycats. At both of my membership communities, for as little as $5 a month, that's less than a bag of organic cherries, you get access to all of my second half conversations, my post-show throwdowns. You get lots of unpublished bonus materials, plus the knowledge that you are supporting me, one of your favorite content creators. So pick whichever platform feels most aligned for you and join us over on either one or both of them for the rest of my conversation with Justin Leslie. I'm also inviting you to sign up for my newsletter at dannycats.com. It's the best way to ensure that we stay in touch, regardless of whatever sort of thought policing is happening out there in big tech clown world. Also, reminding you that my Pop Propaganda Media Literacy course for teens and grown-ups is available for instant access right now over at my website, dannycats.com, or and at poppropaganda.com. I created this course as a means of safeguarding our teens and ourselves from from propaganda, media manipulation, and groupthink. It is 11 modules. It is chock full of fun content, of illustrations, animations. We get it from all realms of media. And when you finish the course, I guarantee you will be able to recognize propaganda immediately, be able to take your attention away, thus safeguarding your critical thinking, your sovereignty, your agency, etc., etc. It's a doozy. It's chock full. It's super fun. Find that over on my website or poppropaganda.com. That does it. Thank you so much for sharing your sacred attention with me. Thank you for remembering that every word matters, that you are omniscopic amazingness. I will see you over on the Patreon and the locals. Have a rockin' day.